It's November 13th, 2005. SmackDown vs. Raw 2006 is about to be released on the current-gen systems. Walk the Line featuring Joaquin Phoenix tells the story of the Man in Black. And in TNA, the Peep Show is about to begin. This is the Federation. I'm Tyler Fudge.
And I'm Travis Fudge.
And this is episode 221, TNA Genesis 2005. You can follow us on Twitter at The Federation. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, The Federation Podcast. T-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. And you can go on and become a member of the illustrious Fudge family, because we all know we all want to be a fudge, right? We all just want to be a fudge inside. You can join that over on our Patreon, just like these fine gentlemen from the musically inclined side of the family, Wooly Fudge. He wants to be called Father, but not for a dollar. Trox Fudge. The intergalactic brother Fat Superman Fudge. Our doe-eyed cousins from down under, Corey and Trevor Fudge. A brother with the biggest cock.
Roaches.
Savage Fudge. His future's so bright he's only 7% of the metals. Sterling Silver Fudge. That uncle who calls it right down the middle, Mike the Ref Fudge. And then that cousin you've never met but dad swears you have, Moose Knuckle Fudge. And Mitch getting us this music on a whim here, because during the show we decided we should do a Genesis. I usually give him some time in advance to make the music, and here we have an instrumental of Joker and the Thief by Wolf Mother.
Wonderful stuff.
We're here to talk about TNA Genesis 2005, and it wasn't originally on the slate to be in this whole arc, but I'm really glad that we did it, because this show, to me, was the best show we've done so far, in my opinion.
You mean out of TNA?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all around, it was a really good show.
Yeah, really, really fun show. It had some good work on it there. Everything was good, and I'm really glad that we added it in. We might as well get into some of the news that have plagued TNA around this time. Remember how, I believe it was the last episode, maybe it was Unbreakable, where we're talking about how after Jimmy Hart goes away from the Naturals, there's this long pause where there's just really nothing going on with the Naturals.
And we brought it up on both the episodes.
It might have been. Well, Chase Stevens suffered a fractured C5, C6 vertebrae at the tapings.
Holy shit.
Yeah, a match against Buck Quarterman and Lex Lovett. I don't know who they are.
I remember Buck Quarterman from those early impacts.
Okay.
But who they are, wouldn't be able to tell you.
Neither one of the names even remotely familiar to me whatsoever. I just don't see it. I really don't.
They have close names to other people. Like, when I see Buck Quarterman on paper, it makes me think of Mike Quackenbush for some reason.
And when
and when I see Lex Lovett on a card, I would say Lenny Lane or like Lash LaRue. I don't know why I have that weird association
with Lash LaRue.
I don't know why. Like, maybe Lex Lovett is Lash LaRue. I don't fucking know.
When it comes to Lash LaRue, as a kid, I loved Lash LaRue. I don't know if it was the red hair. I don't know. But when he was in that Mayhem game, I was like, fuck yeah, Lash LaRue. Fuck yes.
I've never seen him wrestle in my life.
You haven't?
No. I remember him from the Mayhem game. I thought he had a cool name. Like, who names their kid Lash? My name's Lash.
I am a hair that grows on your face. My name is Lash.
He's lashing you.
Or he could be lashing you. But he's from the South, right? Like, I think it was a...
Oh, he sounds like he's fucking Creole or something. LaRue's.
When he was in the MIA, I think it was MIA. I think he was going by Raging Cajun.
Oh, okay.
That's why I say he was from the South. No other reason other than that. Apparently the move that did the job on Chase Stevens was a rocker dropper. Not the first time we've heard of a injury off of a rocker dropper.
Well, I could see someone hurting themselves on it, considering if they would do the whole RVD, like, flip pendulum neck cell thing that looks like certain death.
Yeah, and I suppose the fifth and sixth vertebrae, too, are pretty high up on the spine, because I believe it starts at one and goes down. I'm pretty sure.
It's just like 22, 37, 4, 5.
You're missing like 12 of your vertebrae, sir.
No, that's just how they start. That's just how they start.
TNA this month signed the deal with Midway Games. to release TNA Impact. So that's monumental in a way where, like we said, you would get screenshots, you would see the sweat on their bodies, and the game looked amazing. There would be screenshots of Jeff Hardy, obviously, but
Jeff Hardy, Monty Brown, and AJ Styles would be the first three, and the only man to stay in the final product would be AJ Styles.
Yeah.
Now, this game took, what, 3 years to make? 3 to 4 years?
2008, I want to say.
Is it 08 or 07? It's probably 08, huh?
I think it is 08.
I think it's 08 as well. From 05 to whenever it got released, with delays.
Yeah.
Now, that's with Midway. And that's a company that was on the verge of bankruptcy. I'm pretty sure they went bankrupt after this game came out.
Yes, because there was a sequel.
Now, how long do you think AEW's game will measure up to this?
Like in development time?
Yeah, in development time.
You
think it's going to measure up to the same?
Like the length of time? Yeah. I don't see one coming out this year at all.
I would have low hopes if it came out this year. Yeah, I would have low hopes for the game.
Yeah, and that's why we're getting that GM game, right? Like, and so it just ties you over for something to do, you know. So, I would want a game to be in development for at least 3 years. I mean, Cyberpunk was only in development for since 2016. Like that's all come out now. Cyberpunk was announced in 2011 or something like that.
Yeah.
They didn't actually start development until 2016, 6 months after, or 6 months before the big trailer came out to show what you could do in Cyberpunk.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was not even physically possible. It was a fake trailer. That's been almost proven now. So
neat.
Yeah, so you take a game, you'd want a game to be in development for at least 2 years, I'd assume.
I'm just going to wait for Matt McMuscles to put up a video on Cyberpunk so I can get all the juicy details instead of finding out piece by piece, because it was hurting me day by day, finding out new bad things about Cyberpunk when I didn't get my refund.
Yeah, but, I mean, I got mine, you got yours, so all is good in the neighborhood. I will say there's a really good one called CD Projekt Red Are All Liars by Beat 'Em Ups.
Okay.
And then Jim sent me one. I don't know who made it, but it's just, this is what they said they were going to do, and then it was cut to what they
could do,
right?
Okay.
And it's 40 minutes long of all these things that are just blatant lies by the company. So, I mean, it's very interesting, but yeah, Mac McMuscles, I'm sure, will have one come out sometime soon, unless he completely boycotted the game.
Now, he said that he's waiting.
Oh, yeah. He's waiting. Good for him.
He doesn't want to just throw one up right now when all the information's not out yet.
Because you'll have to do a part two. You know there's going to be a part two.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, fuck that game. I actually just got a shipping notification that my Xbox One or my Xbox Series X will arrive here on Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's exciting. I finally got the chance to play one of those, or get one of those, so Burbs and Jim, you better watch the fuck out. I'm coming for you.
Yeah, well, Tyler, I got a fucking GameCube now, bud.
I know, that's actually really fucking cool, though.
Got some Day of Reckoning.
You know what? I just got a bigger GameCube.
Well, the
same size, you know what I mean? The same shape.
GameCube is a cube, and you have a rectangle.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I got a bigger. Yeah, I suppose it's not.
You have an elongated cube.
Yes. It looks like a GameCube without the carrying case thing.
I love the carrying case.
I do too. It's like
it's
the world's
adorable.
Biggest portable fucking
Xbox Series X needs that. It's made of titanium.
But instead, you know, it's not for portables, for weights, because the cocksucker is probably so goddamn heavy.
Oh man, it stretches out and then wheels are at the bottom so you can carry it around like fucking travel luggage.
And when it smokes, you can pretend it's just your exhaust.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Speaking of more TNA news that's smoking right off the fire, TNA signed Jackie Gata.
Yes, they did.
Yep.
WWE just did some crazy spring cleaning.
I
don't know if it was this season, which would be fall, or if it was literally after Mania, but they released so many people in 2005, and this happens now every year for a long time. I'm gonna try and quickly get up
the everybody that
list
was released
of people that got released in 2005, because it was a big Oh, here we go.
Oh, that was quick.
July 5th, 2005, 21 superstars released. 21 on wow. One day.
And you know, you take the no-compete clause?
This is from neoseeker.com, Tyler.
Wow, that's a name I have not heard in a long time. That's like a place that you make your own website, right?
Forums, yeah. All right, perfect. This is awesome. This ties in with a lot. So at the very beginning of it, it's WWE has proceeded to not renegotiate with Bubba and Devon Dudley.
Yeah.
So they wish them all in all their future endeavors. And they are included along with the rest of the following that also get released. A couple people I didn't know were still around. Ivory, Dave Hebner, Earl Hebner, who would be, you know, selling the merch.
Yep.
I don't know where Brian Hebner is. Hiroko, which would be Kenzo Suzuki's girl. The what do you call her?
I don't know. I know who you're talking. Geisha girl.
The geisha girl. Yeah. Yes. Joy Giovanni.
Oh wow! These are all the people that were in like the SmackDown game that I didn't really know who they were.
Yeah. Yeah. So Joy Giovanni, Diva Search, runner up. Kenzo Suzuki also got released.
Mm.
Bubba and Devon, Matt Morgan, Charlie Haas.
Oh, and his wife. They put them both
Jackie
out on the
Gata.
Fucking...
Yeah, yeah. Marty Jannetty, who was around for the Shawn Michaels feud with Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Dawn Marie, who was pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, that was something else, too. Yeah,
and this was a month after she appeared on One Night Stand. Mark Jindrak.
Mm, yeah, Evolution didn't pay him very well.
The reflection of a rejection, my friend. Maven. Maven, his life will get much more surreal. Shannon Moore, who will have a cup of tea
in TNA.
In TNA just to go back to WWE.
Yeah.
Akio, a.k.a. Jimmy Wang Yang.
This is when he dons the Prince of Punk gimmick, right? When he goes to TNA.
Shannon?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very soon. Like,
yeah.
I will say we might see him on TV by the first month of 06.
Is it... His this run in TNA or the next run where he's got that Jesse dude, the Mohawk guy?
That's the next run.
The next
That's
run?
When he shows up with Jeff.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Gangrel, I didn't know he was still under contract
wow,
with them.
2005.
Yeah. Billy Kidman, who would get hired back as a producer. He now times Raw. He times
Is that
it
what
out.
He does?
He times it out,
well,
yes.
He fucked that up a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know. He's probably been doing it now for like 15 years.
Yeah, if you're bound one or two fuck ups.
The Boss, Spike Dudley.
It's like Sasha Banks.
And in a weird one, because he gets hired back in just 11 months, Kevin Fertig, Mordecai, Kevin Thorne.
Oh, it'd be Kevin Thorne when he comes back. Yeah.
And they are also apparently expected to make several more cuts on the active talent roster and behind the scenes positions at this point.
Well, good to know. You got that information so fast. I had something, one last thing planned to cover for you. On this day, TNA Genesis, the wrestling world would wake up to find out that Eddie Guerrero had passed away.
Yes. This is the day of then,
the
hey?
The day of. Yeah. So, obviously you've got an event scheduled. You can't really cancel it. But every review that I read of this that took place in 2005 was talking about how you could tell this show was a little off because of how everybody was dealing with Eddie Guerrero. It's funny how I say it was the best show we've done so far in this TNA arc, but hey.
I guess you think Conan would definitely be very close to Eddie. Bubba and Devon.
The Deadly Boys.
The Deadlies. The Diddley Brothers.
When he said Deadly in that promo,
yeah,
I was like...
I got the same thing in my head, Tyler. I got the same exact thing. When he said Deadly, I'm like, oh, so it is a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Oh, fuck.
Let's see, though. So you'd have Raven probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Well, we can go and we can lump
Jarrett
Christian.
Would probably
Jarrett,
know him.
Jarrett, yeah. Christian.
And Christian, the Deadly Boys. The
Deadly Boys.
Conan.
Jeff Hardy, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah. Yeah, they probably, sorry, they probably got high at some point.
At some point in time, yeah. You got to think so.
You'd have to.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
So pretty much anyone that was in WWE probably knew him. Or ran across him. So, yeah, it's a pretty healthy amount of people.
God, hey.
Mike Tenay. Jesus Christ, he called when worlds collide.
Definitely Mike Tenay, for sure. That's a guarantee.
Sabu was probably like, fuck you. You didn't sell for me. You didn't give me drugs. Fuck you.
Yeah, no. And you know what, though? We were talking with Sabu and his no-selling thing throughout the whole match with Abyss. I was like, he's probably got a whole chapter in Sabu's book of hate.
Who, Abyss?
Yeah.
Considering how he's having...
great
fun
matches
with them. Like, yeah. I have no issue.
Some of those nose shots seemed a little snug to me.
Abyss is great.
He is, though.
He's so
at
great.
This time,
that
perfect.
Promo with the orange?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That wasn't an orange. That was an egg.
Wasn't an egg?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the Yoke Master. But yeah, no, let's get into the show here. It's TNA Genesis 2005, November 13th. 2005, from Orlando, Florida, in Universal Studios. 900 people in attendance. How many pay-per-view buys? Unbreakable did 15. Bound for Glory did
35. I'm going to go with 16,500.
20,000, actually. They're keeping us. Wow. They're getting a Spike TV bump.
Good for them.
Good for them, that's indeed. Good for them,
and
indeed.
And their pay-per-views are probably... $15 to $20.
I wouldn't say they're too expensive. Yeah, I'd assume so. But Travis, pop quiz. Walk the Line had become a massive box office hit, almost making back its whole budget in its first week. But Travis, how much did the movie gross in total? $119 million, $187 million, $67 million, or $149 million?
That's weird. This is a massive box office hit, and it has almost the same budget as The Wedding Singer.
I don't even have the budget there.
Oh, this is just the
this
box
is how
office.
Much it would make.
But you said it would make back its budget.
Oh, yeah, no, this is in total.
In total?
This is, like, through its whole theatrical run, not the first weekend.
Okay, okay. Yeah. I'm just going to go big right here. $187 million.
You're goddamn right. $119 million is the U.S. gross, $67 million is the international gross, and $149 million, that was completely... thrown out of my head, and you could tell that because there's no dollar sign next to it, because I forgot about the dollar
wow.
sign.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's that. So, yeah. The successful first take in the pop quiz, so, hey, not bad.
Did you
not
know
bad.
That the budget for There's Something About Mary was like, or no, the box office sales was like $260 million?
It's wild. That movie made so much fucking... No wonder Ben Stiller couldn't, like, get his career back because that movie was so goddamn big.
Oh, man.
Like, Jesus. Matt Dillon was never the same after that. I mean, like, he wasn't really doing much anyways. Wild things with Denise Richards and Neve Campbell.
That was good for him.
That was... Oh, yeah, no, that scene probably at least. Right? Childhood Awakening.
Oh, fuck.
But, Travis, we might as well jump into the show. It opens up with speeches from JFK, Clinton, George W., and more presidential elects.
Did not like it one bit.
I thought it was fantastic.
I think that their video packages are stupid with the African Prince Nana.
I did not like that, but at least he wasn't doing that here. You know what I mean?
It's like he's the voiceover guy. You don't need to see the voiceover guy.
No.
I guess I don't think we can talk about this show until we mention that they did the primetime special on November 3rd.
Yeah, on a 2-hour episode.
Yeah.
Thursday would end up being their time slot, right?
Eventually.
Yeah.
It would take a bit. I think it would be next September. No Surrender. I think they announce it because then No Surrender turns into their big announcement show. Every No Surrender, there's a big announcement.
Really? I've never donned
Kurt
down
Angle
that.
And them moving to Thursday's primetime was 2006.
Huh.
And then 2007, I'm pretty sure, was another thing. Like, we're going live or something like that.
We got Hulk Hogan.
That's 09. Yeah, so on this show, it's essentially the Bound for Glory show all over again. The Ultimate X rematch happens.
Yes.
Rhino and Jeff Jarrett happens again.
Now, this is right after the paper. Is this the episode where Jarrett beat him
yes.
for the title? Okay, yeah.
So,
it was the next week on next Thursday after the pay-per-view.
Yes.
Bound for Glory.
Yes. Yeah. It was still taped. It was taped probably the Tuesday after Bound for Glory.
Tuesday is their taping day.
Yeah. And, yeah, they would have the Ultimate X rematch where Petey Williams would win properly. They would have a beatdown angle of Team 3D with AMW aligning with Jarrett again to take out Team 3D and Rhino to get Jarrett back his title. And other than that, that was pretty much it when it comes to that show, but they literally redid the Ultimate X match.
Yeah, and this time they would use a lanyard instead of zip ties.
Wow.
The chain with the lanyard, they figured that out finally.
Isn't that what you suggested last week?
I think that the only reason why I suggested it was because in my head it had already been planted in there that that's how they did it. But I don't want to take credit or being some kind of virtuoso. Not like on SCL where we said that the best thing that you could do is put Private Party in Impact, and what do you know? That's what happened. But that aside, you know, we talk about how TNA always had these great openers. So far, we're 1-2. So Raven comes out. Larry Zbyszko's in the ring. He announces that Raven, you know, he has an opponent, and the only hint is that it's somebody from his past. But he can quit. And he won't make his life living hell by approaching him with this opponent. If he decides not to quit, though, he's got to face this opponent who is, quote-unquote, going to make his life hell. And
this storyline stinks.
It's garbage.
There's no long-term win in the end with this storyline.
No.
I don't think they had any idea because they're just booking it on the fly every week.
Yeah.
It's like, you got 6 days to go. Let's figure out what we're going to do with Raven this week.
Yeah, how are we going to fuck Raven this week?
And, I mean, it happens again next month. This is the same thing next month. Raven's in the opening match against someone from his past. And, I mean, it's a better opponent, but still.
I can't think of who it is, but I'm assuming it's Spike Dudley.
No.
Hack? Or, yeah?
WCW guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't even want to know now. Okay.
Yeah. This is not working at all. And I'll even get into a next match, too. Like, why do they book their undercard like this?
Mm.
These are not the people that you want to see on your undercard.
No. Nope.
I don't care about... You know what? Give me Ron Killings and Eric Young.
Yeah.
On the undercard. I don't need to see Bobby Roode, A1. I don't need to see Conan, BG James. I don't need to see Raven, the dude that was literally your champion all summer in the opening match.
Like, Bobby Roode, I'm fine with that one just because he is young at this point in time. He's not my cup of tea, right? Like, it's not... But I can understand Bobby. A1, no. A1 is...
Garbage.
He's garbage. Like, Unbreakable, I said he's better than I remembered, and I still stand by that point. But it's not very good. It's still like, I've watched three matches of him now in the last 3 weeks, and I'm done. I don't want to see any more A1 matches. So
it's pretty much anyone that you don't remember much of in any of these arcs.
He's no Henry Godwin, that's for sure.
We got to find our Henry Godwin.
Will we find? I think I found my Henry Godwin, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Sanjay Dutt. I think Sanjay.
I loved Sanjay Dutt when I was younger, so I can't call him my hog.
That's fair. I wasn't a huge fan of Sanjay Dutt. His hair really threw me off. That really spiked up in the back, down in the front.
Oh, okay.
I just thought was just
him
just
balding incredibly fast.
That the massive amounts of back knee he would have.
Yeah,
threw me off a little bit. Yeah. But
I don't like his pinstripe mustache.
No, that's pretty douchey. Pretty douchebag. I think he still rocks that today with his bald head.
Hmm.
Working WWE.
He's fast.
He is very fast. He is very fast. But no, they bring up again to Raven's girlfriend, and Raven gets really agitated. And he just starts wanting to get at Larry Zbyszko, who then says, fine, fine, fine. Well, you can face your opponent. And it's PJ Polacco, a.k.a. Just Incredible. And, yeah, I mean.
You think that his girlfriend might be Jackie Gata at this point? Now it doesn't. We never see a girlfriend of Raven's, I don't think. But do you think maybe that could be it?
You know.
Like, maybe that's what they're thinking.
I can't come up with any reason to say no. You know what I mean?
Like, I wonder if it'll come up in the, like, the Observers or Torches.
Maybe. But no, great opener. Great opener. Tanay goes so far as to say that Larry's trying to hold the young man back. Raven's 41 at this point in time.
And he does not. He does not. Like, look young at all. He does not look like he's good for his age. Nothing like that. He is aging terribly.
It's funny how the worst point in his career his body was is when he decides to take his shirt off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, and I would imagine, too, it probably comes to the fact that everybody is dressing like Raven now.
But he's been doing that since he got into TNA.
Well, yeah, but yeah, and he started it in WWF, actually, where he had that jacket and the dress.
Well, he did, but I mean, it's been his entire TNA run where he's been shirtless.
Yeah.
And, buddy, like 2002, 2003, he looks
fine.
Yeah. And then I guess 2004 is that transition year. It's like him and Ric Flair transitioned into old people the same year.
Ric
Flair looked normal up until he joined Evolution. Then all of a sudden, it's just week by week. Fuck, Rick.
He turns into the Nature Boy from Talking Shop Mania.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that, the Low Rent H.
Yeah, Low Rent H. PJ, he grabs a cane from under the ring. Cassidy comes to the aid of his mentor, eats cane shot. PJ would then aim at Raven but bust it against the ring post. Thank God it didn't hit Raven.
That was a hard fucking hit.
It splintered completely. But back in the ring, Raven catches a super kick, turns it into Raven's new favorite move, the ankle lock. He wrenches that cocksucker in for a bit. PJ would escape, though. And just, you know, a couple transitional moves later, Raven hits an even flow DDT and picks up the win.
Mm-hmm.
Not much of a match. Now, will I say it is the worst match I've ever seen? No. Is it the worst match of TNA history? God, no. Is it the worst match on this show? Maybe not, because it's 5 minutes. How can it be the worst match on the show?
It went by quick.
Yeah.
There are more matches that I kind of suffered through.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not gonna
the next one.
Yeah. I'm going to say the next match was definitely my least favorite match of the show.
100%. Easily. 100%. We get a video package playing, telling the story of the turmoil between 3 Live Crew. But once that's over, they cut to BG James, where he starts cutting a promo, obviously knocks Vince McMahon, saying that he's looking for a lifeboat over in Connecticut.
There's a bunch of people looking for lifeboats.
I suppose, yeah, because of all the releases, hey?
And Pete and Mommy Christian quitting now, too.
Yeah.
They suffer through Dynamite interview syndrome. Where it was on the live mic.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow.
Even TNA fixed it real fast.
Oh, they fix it so quick.
Yeah.
So quick.
So much faster than AEW. Come on, guys. You don't want to be worse than TNA at something. That's not something anybody wants
already,
to do.
There's already so many glaring resemblances to WCW, and you don't want to pick up on the bad ones.
You mean in this TNA or
in
AEW? Yeah.
I mean, Turner, TNT, Sting, Arn, Tony.
Yeah.
Tully.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There is
Cody
a lot
likes
of
Georgia.
Cody, you could tell who Cody really has an affliction towards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you could tell. Those are his boys. So, but, you know, Conan, he would talk about how he doesn't trust Kip, yada, yada. This is the same old going through here with this storyline. It really doesn't ever change. But up next is a 6-sided stick fight.
Hockey sticks on a pole, or you could say.
Yep.
Hockey sticks in a pole.
In a pole. Yep. It's 3 Live Crew, BG James, Conan, and Ronda Truth Killings taking on Team Canada, A1, Bobby Roode, and Eric Young, with Kip James as the special guest referee. And I'm just going to say this, that this is the stupidest match I've ever heard of. The rules are that if you're the legal man, you can grab a hockey stick and just take a quote-unquote top ched, right? Hit him right in the face if you really wanted to. But no one really listens to the rules as soon as the match starts, and they start going for the sticks, and nothing really happens. You know, it's just like, yeah, sure, go grab those sticks if you want, man. Whatever. It's like, what? Have some semblance here.
Made no sense.
Nope.
It made no sense, and you could tell how invested the crowd was into this, because BG shows up, and he's doing his new ladies and gentlemen bit. And he's probably been doing it now for 2 years.
Yeah.
And the crowd cannot follow along. They zoom in on crowd members singing along, and all of a sudden they're doing ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. You can see them mouthing on to it. And then once he starts going on, you can just see that they're still moving their mouth, but not to the right stuff.
Because they don't know what it is he says now.
There's like people that just, they're smiling, they're having a great time, like, and all of a sudden it just wipes away. <It's> like,
yeah, it's like if you go and see a band live, right? Let's say now you go to see Metallica live. They're playing Enter Sandman, right? All of a sudden at the chorus, it changes all the words on you.
It says the ring came off my pudding can.
Yeah, see? And you're just stood there like, I can't have fun. I don't know how to have fun with this. I don't know the words. Right? So it's kind of like the same thing, because it is him doing his greatest hits, you know? So probably 3/4 of them there didn't even know TNA was a thing. It was like, oh, wrestling? Let's go in and see it. Oh, cool. Road Dogg. Awesome.
They saw Jeff Hardy on the poster cover, and they're like, whoa.
Yeah. And to touch on, Kip James has the worst ref getup in the world. How can you take that ref seriously? He wore less clothes than a lady ref.
Yeah.
And it's just, come on, dude. What the fuck? He has got the I'm Rick James Bitch t-shirt.
I'm Kip James Bitch.
Kip James Bitch t-shirt. Probably the best t-shirt he ever had.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the only one he ever had was, well, that only good one he ever had, other than that, is the Mr. Ass t-shirt. So, really. But yeah, I know Conan pays tribute to Eddie. You know, as well as BG doing the greatest hits. But yeah, no, the Kip scares the shit out of Eric Young.
Who has headgear on.
Yes. Actually, you can even say that Kip scared the sanity out of Eric Young. And that would cause him to cower in cowardice and go back and just tuck his tail between his legs and just go back on the aprons. Dude. He's the ref. He can't touch you. Right? What the fuck?
Mike Tenay calls Eric Young the daredevil of the group.
Because he does an elbow drop. Really? If anybody's the daredevil of this group, it's Petey Williams.
Mike, you commentated Lucha.
This is the daredevil? fucking hell. Conan loses a shoe again?
Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
Where he puts it on the hockey plate?
Yes. Yes.
He spears him?
That was amazing. I'm loving the shoe gimmick more and more every time I see it.
To me, when the first happened on Unbreakable, I was like, oh, what a coincidence, right? Then as it's on Bound for Glory, it's like, Oh, you're trying to make it a thing. It's like Genesis.
And now he puts it on a stick.
Yeah, like Genesis is like, oh no, it is a thing now then, because I mean this is 3 months in a row, right? Like this has actually no, this is a 4 month span because we skipped one between Unbreakable and Bound for Glory, I believe. No, we didn't. Okay, fair
they
enough.
Just took a month off.
Oh, that makes sense because of the Spike TV thing. Yeah, why build to a pay per view that nobody's really going to see?
Exactly.
You got BG climbs up to the top rope and to grab a stick, and he just looks down and is like, it's too high. And I'm pretty sure.
Getting a nosebleed.
Pretty sure that nosebleed was because he was, in fact, too high, not the stick was too high. And so he came back down. Ron the Truth Killings, I believe, would go up and grab the stick, and then BG would then sober up and he would get his own hockey stick.
He would go up to another turnbuckle and grab a hockey stick within the next 2 minutes.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, maybe you had the wobbles because you're a little high, BG. Maybe that's what it is. But the end of the match, you know, he gets some decent action there. All Team Canada gets their shit in. They're all doing move after move after move, followed up by the perfect Eric Young elbow drop. And I preface this now because it's going to come in later in the play. Three Live Crew, though, would clear the ring with hockey sticks, pile them on the dick of Eric Young, and do a what's up leg drop, basically, onto the hockey sticks onto the dick of Young.
All the stolen sticks. They stole a bunch of sticks from Team Canada.
Yes, yes. Stolen sticks indeed. But Kip and Conan, after the match, would give each other some knucks, and Tene would be ecstatic.
He touches knuckles.
Yeah. They touch knuckles!
Oh, Tene is amazing on this show. In the next segment, my favorite Tene bit. It's great.
What, tell us, Travis. Tell us about this next segment.
You get an interview with James Mitchell in Abyss. This is not the Tene bit that I'm talking about, but I do love this. This is where he's smashing eggs.
Yes.
That, you know, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs or something like that.
But you can't say that because Sabu's brain is always on drugs.
That's true. That's true. I thought it was just a great segment.
It's great. It's great. I mean, we could take a listen to it if you want to.
If you got it.
I do. I most certainly do.
Sabu, I'm certain that you had this no disqualification stipulation added in order to take full advantage of the fact that you have somehow miraculously stumbled upon the one thing in this universe that Abyss fears. The one thing which is to Abyss what kryptonite is to Superman. Barbed wire. And after months of therapy, I had nearly cured him of his barbed wire phobia. You just had to pick that ugly, festering, pus-ridden scab of a memory. Well, upon further reflection, I'm glad you did, because you have sealed your fate. There will be no more Sabu after tonight. You've opened Pandora's box, and from it will emerge the full, unmitigated fury of Abyss. Of course, I realize that trying to articulate that to someone as infantile and insane as you is an exercise in futility. So I've taken it upon myself to provide you with a little visual aid. Sabu.
And he arted up the egg.
Yes, with a little.
And this, Sabu, is your brain on my weapon of mass destruction, the monster Abyss!
Just imagine yolk all over Abyss.
And he's trying to crush an egg more than he's already crushed it. Dude. What are you doing?
This is it's such a great. I think it might be my favorite part of the show, honestly. But it's fantastic to see it and how they're actually telling a good story here with Abyss and how he is deathly afraid of the barbed wire, throughout, just the last few weeks. You got Sabu coming out with barbed wire wrapped around his arm, scaring the shit out of Abyss. And it's really good, storytelling between these two hardcore wrestlers that you wouldn't expect there to be decent storytelling between.
It's the only good part of the hardcore wrestling that they do.
Yeah.
They like to tap to that well a lot.
Yeah.
But this is the only storyline where it makes sense. And they're about to build up to a barbed wire match, and it's going to make sense why they do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's cool. That's cool. Kudos to them for that.
100%. This was fantastic. The next segment is, it started off by Weston Tene running down the card. Tene, though, he gets the word that the newest acquisition is about ready to make its way to the ring.
And we see feet.
We see feet and confetti. There's already confetti on the floor.
Wow.
They're already celebrating backstage, buddy. Round of confetti for the boys. We get a countdown, and then the name Christian Cage blasts on the screen, and the crowd makes a little noise, and then they see him, and they're like, oh, it's that. Yes. Right? They make a lot of noise. It's one of those things where the name still doesn't ring with me, Christian Cage, all these years later.
I don't mind it. It was his first name.
It was.
That's cool.
Yep. Yep. He sounds like an action hero.
Christian Cage?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Christian Slater mixed with fucking Nick Cage.
I thought that this was a really, really odd segment.
Yeah.
Did I think that it was going to be better? Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be better.
It's not that great of a promo.
I think Christian gets better as a promo the longer he goes in TNA.
Once he gets into that heel character?
Yeah.
Yeah,
100%. He's way better.
100%. Like, this is not what you would notice.
He's still like 03 cocky, whiny Christian here.
Yep, 100%. He wanted to dispel rumors that he wasn't fired. He wasn't lowballed on his contract. He says that he's not here because he doesn't want to watch a doctor pull objects out of a man's ass on live television.
And then Mike Tenay. Amen! Holy fuck,
Tenay is on fire this episode.
He fucking loved that line.
Yeah, he was very happy. He goes on to say that he broke on the scene. There were two companies. One was old and the other one was fresh. Fast forward to 2005 and it's the same, just reversed. Fast forward today and it's still true. There's a company that's old. There's a company that's fresh. You know, it's
companies have switched around.
Yeah,
you know, the fresh ones.
Exactly. But yeah, no, it's. He says he's here to fulfill his destiny, and that's how he rolls. He said that like it was a catchphrase of his.
That's how I roll.
Yeah,
that is a catchphrase of his.
It's not a very good one.
That's how I roll.
Yeah,
I like it.
Do you? Yeah, fair enough.
Because that's.
Is that how he used to do it?
No, the crowd. Wow. The crowd.
Oh.
All the crowds says it.
I was like, if he did it like that, I would be like, yeah, no, that's cool.
It's cooking.
ASMR Christian. It's not the worst segment.
He has a lot of fire. Has a lot of fire. And, I mean, it's just a shame you can't tap Mike Tenay's fire. Like, he has the most fire out of anyone in this
he's
segment.
He's on fire.
Because, like, every time Christian says something and there's a pause, he's like, you hear that? It's because he likes wrestling. He likes it. And it's like, today, fucking calm down, dude. Are you hanging out with BG James?
But then we get Scott D'Amore and Bobby Roode. They interject, and they like to play a game called Remember When.
Don West would also drop shit-eating grin without a censor during Scott D'Amore's entrance. He's got that shit-eating grin on his face, Mike.
Pay-per-view, you can get away with it. Sabu got away with dropping a fuck.
Yeah, but he was saying it not...
Get the fuck out of my way!
...on a microphone.
Yeah.
Rhino said in the main event, you want to see me pile-drive this motherfucker? And Janae's like, yeah, we want to see you pile-driver
that
him.
That motherfucker!
Fucking Tanae, man.
Scott D'Amore, though, he would go down memory lane with Christian and try to evoke fond memories. And then he would have this doozy, and I'm pretty sure he drops an F-bomb in there. Not the fuck either. But
Coleman, edge this.
Yes. So let's see.
And Stu stretched Adam's ass. Is the dunghead faggy bastard out?
Weren't those great times?
Stu Hart impersonation.
We've came a long way.
So if you ever wonder where the sexual Stu Hart comes from,
Scotty. I'm pretty sure my Stu Hart fascination just came from this specific segment from 15 years ago that I saw once.
No, and I only say that because nowhere else in life have I ever seen anybody really do Stu Hart as like this creepy sexual deviant, right?
That's fair.
Then I see this and I'm like, I remember this. I not vividly, but it brings, it's like, was that one of those things where it's like, I think this was my own idea, but really I stole it off somebody. Right.
Yeah. But he does call Adam not a saggy bastard.
Nope. Weapon will sticks.
Yeah.
But after this, Scott D'Amore will tell Christian that he needs to watch where he stands. because he needs to make sure that he makes the right moves here. And if he joins Planet Jarrett, they will rule the wrestling industry forever.
What's in it for Christian?
Nothing.
No titles?
Nothing at all. You just get to not get your ass kicked every night, which will actually mean you will get your ass kicked every night because this is wrestling. The baby faces will reign supreme unless you're Jeff Jarrett.
I was about to say, not so fast, Tyler. This is TNA.
Jeff Jarrett won't get his ass kicked, but all of his lackeys in Under Him will. So
yeah. At least you'll end the show on top every single time.
Yeah, even if it is through Jeff. So
it was okay. I too angly, too much smoke and mirrors as per usual with TNA. Yeah. Like could you have just gotten away with Christian showing up and cutting a promo? Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm okay with what Scott did, but it's just too gimmicky. Like, fuck, leave it for Impact.
Yeah, I agree.
Way too much stuff.
You could have had him debut in the main event or something like that.
You could have had him debut here and then just like show up in the main event to tease Jarrett.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, and then on Impact, have Scott D'Amore try to recruit him because Jeff Jarrett doesn't want to have to face him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Anything like that would have been a little bit better. Agreed. Rude would then tell him that he better take the offer on the table because he and the boys have busted their ass, and if it wasn't, because of that, there wouldn't be a company here, so you get the chance to walk on in and go for it. You might as well join the right side. They hand him a Team Canada t-shirt, and Christian says it's the right size, but it might take some time to see if it fit. And they say that he'll make his announcement later tonight.
So, yeah. TNA.
It's not a bad shirt, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
If it wasn't bright red and white, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, OG Federation shirt.
OG Federation shirt, how ugly that fucking cocksucker was.
As red as my pop filter.
Maybe redder. Monty Brown, though, he's backstage with Shane Douglas.
Mm.
It's great.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where there's so many great audio clips in this time that is like, okay, all the good audio clips are at this point in time. So, like, I'm going to either A, not be able to show everybody the greatness of these audio clips because they're so close together, or I just say, fuck it, and I show them all, right? And I've got them all. Whether or not I show them all, I don't know. He's backstage with Douglas and says that he might get leapfrogged. He says the only thing rolling out of the Serengeti is Christian's head. It's fantastic, great stuff. But I really do think we should because, Monty Brown is the goddamn man. So let's hear what Monty Brown has to say with this great cadence. I've condensed it too, so it's just the best bits. So here we go.
You got jokes, Shane? You think something's funny? This is not funny.
Ooh, we got major acquisitions. We're acquiring this guy. This guy's going to be acquired.
Christian Cage. I don't care how you roll, but you roll onto the Serengeti. The only thing that's rolling out is your head. And then you want to talk about the charismatic enigma, the psychedelic psychotic. He's only going to get one thing, just like Christian Cage is going to get, because the alpha male will not be denied. You want to talk about big, major acquisitions? Well, now the alpha male is going big, major game hunting, and it starts tonight. Jeff Hardy, Christian Cage, the only thing that you two will acquire is the power.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Marty and Monty Brown smoker,
like a cigarette smoker or a weed smoker.
Cigarette.
His voice seems like he might have that
in between. I'm noticing it now that it's isolated, but in between him taking his breaths, he does a.
Okay, yeah. It may be. It's very, very possible.
Scary.
Crazy that football player smoking. But I mean, football players have short career spans, especially compared to other sports. So.
Might be a cigar guy.
Who knows? I can see him. You've seen that shirt he wore when he released that video this year. He looks like he could be a cigar guy.
Yeah,
Frank Kazarian, send him a cigar. For Jesus sakes, he might come to AEW for a fucking promo. It'd be great. I need to see Monty Brown in wrestling again. I just need to. I don't give a fuck. It's got to happen. And I'll come up with every fucking thing that I can.
Can we get a tag team of Henry O. Godwin and Monty Brown in 2021? Can we just...
Please?
Can we get a King of Trios where they're too?
Henry and Godwin, Phineas, and fucking Monty?
Oh, buddy.
Buddy, you won't get a King
He's
of Trios,
He's in the fucking
though.
Serengeti with those two.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, deep. Deep. Might be the Southern
with
Serengeti.
Puma and Timon.
Monty Brown with Puma and Timon.
Yeah.
He's Simba. Yeah. Monty Brown, he's Simba. It's his Serengeti. There you go.
Perfect.
Indeed. We got up next the NWA World Heavyweight Title number one contenders match.
No, it's not.
It's just a contenders
match. It's a contender match.
This is how it's written on Cage Match, and they would really, really swipe that one like... Boy, oh boy, how
then,
fucking chintzy is this?
You get the graphic. It's a contender match.
Yeah.
The winner of this match will rise up in the ranks.
It's like every match, that's every match.
And it's funny because Monty's been teasing to having like Jarrett's number now for months.
Yeah.
And Jarrett's not been champion very long, but still. And Monty, spoiler alert, he wins this match. And he goes on to face Christian Cage in a number one contendership match next month. And Tyler, the month after that, there's no title match on the fucking pay-per-view. It's Monty Brown and Jeff Jarrett taking on Sting and Christian Cage. They don't have a title match until February.
Who, Christian and Jarrett?
Jarrett.
Jesus Christ.
A turning point as a title match, but...
God damn. How they do Monty Brown bad, man. It's like, whose idea was it to have Zombie Hardy?
Oh, the monster?
Like, he comes down looking like he's high on bath salts.
Yeah, but then he starts, like roaring and doing a bunch of crazy-ass, like, animalistic shit.
Yeah, like, he snaps and is, like, doing all kinds of...
some bath salt PCP definitely. Vibe going on there.
They're in Florida.
Yeah, and this was the wackiest shit.
Yeah.
It was so wacky. It made me not want to see a single match of Jeff Hardy's ever in TNA after this.
Yeah, it's like this is what the WWE wouldn't allow him to do. And this is probably part of the reason why they never ever gave him real reins to do anything.
This is a guy that, if he's got creative control, he's going to do stupid shit. Like, look at his TNA run with Will of the Wisp and shit like that.
You're Jeff Hardy. You're synonymous. Like, people see your face. You don't have to be a big wrestling fan to know who Jeff Hardy is. Because in the late 90s, early 2000s, he was one of the faces of the WWF. Doesn't matter where he was on the card, those ladder matches with him, Edge, Christian, the Dudleys, were so popular that a lot of fans just knew who he was. And you're going to put a mask on? Get the fuck out of here. Right? Like... It's almost as absurd as Stephanie McMahon wanting Ultimo Dragon to lose the mask because he was so fucking handsome.
Chunky Dragon.
Chunky Dragon from Fatramania. Goddamn right. He's really flattened out there on the sides there. He's wide. Yeah. Yeah. That was eye opening. It's like, dude, stay the fuck out of the ring. Like, you don't need to be there. You're Ultimo Dragon. Don't ruin your legacy like that. But no. This match, it wouldn't really... It's not... Jeff Hardy is Jeff Hardy. You know,
and like, Jeff was doing Jeff spots. The Brawl to the Outside is...
The crawl.
The fucking catwalk crawl where he had to go into the crowd and then dive out of the crowd, risking crowd members in between who refused to move.
Yeah.
So here he is walking the catwalk and there's a security guard there with probably another fan... And they don't fucking move. They move eventually, but they don't move. So Jeff's there fucking like slipping and shit like that. What was it? Yeah. Like he's trying to jump, but he doesn't clear the jump all the way.
Oh, yeah. No, he would almost die. Because like the way that the everything is situated there is you have the railing. And this railing would come into play many times this night. And not saying in a good way. He would dive, and then you got the stairs right here. Monty's right here. So there was a very small room for error where he would jump and then possibly hit Monty or fall on the stairs. And then he clips the fucking railing on his feet and just narrowly avoids falling on the steps, which could have been horrible. But
especially with the list of injuries that he already has to begin with.
I mean, the guy is a sloppy worker now as it is. Like, the whole match I can only describe as like a limp noodle. You can only imagine what he's like if he hurts himself.
Yeah.
Right, so.
Well, and it's not even it. Like, the crowd is chanting for him the entire match just by his poor performance. And what does he do when he gets back in the ring? He misses a whisper in the wind. He fucks up a double clothesline layout spot. Thankfully, he redeems himself with his comeback. He hits his whisper in the wind, his crotch leg drop, and a reverse twist of fate, a swanton, but he misses that.
And then, he would basically fall to the pounce.
He would get pounced.
And he would get the win. Monty now is, you know, a contender.
He has moved up in the rankings.
The only other thing I wanted to touch on in this match was Monty making West or Tenay look like an idiot when he's like, get out of the way. And then Tenay's like, what do you mean get out of the way? And Don West is like, I don't know, but I'm getting out of the way. And he's like, guys, you realize what you just said? They're like, I don't know what he means by get out of the way, but I'm getting out of the way. And he's like, dude, this is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, come on, guys. Give it a goddamn break. But yeah, I know Tenay says, you know, at the end of this, make sure that, you know, at some point in time, he may get a shot at the NWA title. It's like, this is when you knew Monty Brown was never, ever going to get close to that title ever again. It's like, we're going to build this like it's a number one contenders match, but when the match comes, we're going to make sure everybody knows this ain't a number one contenders match because Monty Brown's winning. It's like, goddamn. It's like, this is Desmond Wolfe before Desmond Wolfe. Where he kept on winning those votes and had to stop doing the votes because he would always win. So, but other than that, though, the match is still fun because it's Monty Brown, in my opinion. But Jeff Hardy, boy, Jeff Hardy. Like, this era of Jeff Hardy is super abysmal.
It's terrible.
It is. It's absolutely terrible. He wouldn't really come around until, and I'm still not a huge fan of Jeff Hardy, but when he's sober and has a story and a purpose, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, the broken Matt Hardy stuff in TNA I thought was really good.
Well, his entire run in WWE after this stint in TNA is his most successful run he's ever had.
Yeah, win the title.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
CM Punk run, you Hardy Boys reunion.
Pigtails.
Yeah.
that era, Takeshi 6ix9ine era Jeff Hardy. Actually, you know what, though? Takeshi is Jeff Hardy. Really?
Yeah, you can't say that Jeff's Takeshi.
No. Takeshi took all that from him. Travis. Pop quiz. The second installment of WWE SmackDown vs. Raw began the trend of moving away from the arcadey feel, as well as the first version to be released on the PSP. Which of the following wrestlers were a PSP exclusive?
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Ding, ding, ding. There was also some roundabout way, apparently, to get Miss Elizabeth. I don't know if that's true or not. As soon as like we were going through the people that were fired, and I looked at my thing, I was like, fuck, Kenzo Suzuki, I got on the list. He's been fired, or his lady got fired. Like, fuck. He's definitely not in the game. But he was supposed to be in the game. There is a leaked picture, like, in the cache of the game, there's a picture of Kenzo Suzuki. Same thing with Mr. America, but he was taken out. There would never be a Mr. America in the game. Every time he was slated to be in the game, he would get taken out. And Greg Glove Taker, that's a SmackDown Here Comes the Pain thing, I'm pretty sure.
That or is Purple Glove Taker, I can't remember.
Yeah, one of them was in that SmackDown.
I think
game.
That Kenzo made it in one of the GameCube games, though.
Maybe.
I think he got one of the video game payoffs.
Day of Reckoning 2, maybe?
I think so, yeah. What a video game age, though, huh? All the SmackDowns, and you got Raw 1, 2, and
all
fucking
the GameCube ones.
WrestleMania 21, and then all the GameCube ones. Like,
X8 and...
Could
19.
You imagine owning all three systems and just being like, wow.
So many wrestling
three
games.
Video games of wrestling coming out this year.
They're all garbage, except for the SmackDown games.
Well, the GameCube,
well, the GameCube games.
GameCube
sorry.
Ones are okay.
I'm thinking about the Raw games.
The Raw ones are terrible.
They're garbage. I've never played the WrestleMania 21 for Xbox.
It's the worst one.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. It's unfinished. It's buggy. It's glitchy.
Fair enough.
It skips. The frame rate's bad.
Yeah.
Graphics are okay.
And the only time I ever played WF Raw was on the PC.
Yeah, I had Raw 2 at one point. It's pretty bad.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
You don't need to do anything to beat somebody.
Like, the rosters are awesome, and the graphics are okay, but the gameplay is broken.
It's abysmal. Yeah. The roster, I always thought the roster was good, because you got Goldberg with the tights. I was like,
for some
why
reason,
Raw
they couldn't get it right.
Yeah, on the SmackDown games. Like, why'd you give him shorts? He hasn't worn shorts in years.
He wore shorts once in WWE.
Backlash 2003. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Let's see. Where are we now? Elimination X, the first ever Elimination X match. This match, I will say, very fun.
Oh, yeah.
This was...
There's no I will say's about it. You look at this and you're like, okay, well, I better make sure I pay attention to this.
This is the match of the night. and this and the Abyss Sabu match would be my favorite matches of the night. This one above all else, though. So good. So good. The Ministry, which I don't remember ever being a thing.
I don't think it lasts very long.
No. Sorry. Daniels, Joe, Shelley, and Strong.
Well, Joe is not a part of the Ministry.
Fair enough. Well, they're trying to make him a part because Daniels and Joe having this butting heads since they've started teaming up. But this is obviously the story of this match where, you know, can Joe and Daniels work together? And first thing I notice is they cut to a crowd and there's a dude wearing a bag over his head. It's like, what? Like, literally, grocery bag.
Ah, it's Christian Cage.
Blue dot, motherfucker. But I will say this is where I was just like, you know what, man? Sanjay Dutt, he comes in. He is smooth like peanut butter. There's no crunchy to him whatsoever. Even when something goes awry... He makes a way to...
A lot of those tilt-a-whirls looked like they could have ended in disaster, but for some reason, he would kind of figure out a way to make them work.
Yeah.
And you know what? Everyone looked very impressive in this match. Everyone had their time to shine. It was really cool. But Matt Bentley, what did he do in this match to make himself stand out?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Not a fucking thing.
He did a couple Shawn Michaels spots. He did an elbow drop. He did a super kick.
The elbow drop, this is why I brought up Eric Young's elbow drop in a match before.
He had a much better elbow drop than Matt Bentley.
Yes. Matt Bentley does Shawn Michaels moves, and this is an example as to why he's not getting over as Shawn Michaels' cousin. It's because he goes to do Shawn Michaels moves, and he can't even come close to how Shawn Michaels does them. He can't even beat other people on this roster. Bentley in a nutshell.
He looks like suburban Nebraska Shawn Michaels. Yeah, it's not good. It's not fucking good at all. And on in a match where Roderick Strong's got like 3 years of experience and Alex Shelley is not very impressive, but at the same time, he's very fun.
Alex Shelley as a singles competitor never was my cup of tea. You put him in a tag team match, though.
Yeah.
He shines, especially when him and Saban figured out how to mesh their styles together to make a perfect tag team. Right now, though, you look at him as like he's a Doug Williams type guy. He's a William Regal type wrestler. He's going to ground you down. He's not going to really do much flying, you know, but he's good at what he does, at least. His boots, though, they're not very good at doing what they need to do. His boots just started falling apart.
Did they?
Yeah, he had all kinds of like little Velcro straps, like silver Velcro straps on it. And they would just start falling apart.
Okay, fair. Yeah, everyone looked very impressive, but the most impressive, obviously, Samoa Joe. Good fucking lord.
Taking liberties with Sanjay.
Him and Dutt in the ring is my first note of Joe's, is where he runs in immediately. He face washes Sanjay in the corner. He goes for his running face wash, but that gets blocked by Sanjay. Joe just gets more angry.
Yeah.
And that's when it's just done. He comes at him 100% more aggressive with the running face wash. He, like, Well, Sanjay psychs him out on a moonsault, which was pretty clever. But then Aries gets tagged in, and he tries to pretty much match Joe's offense with him. Like, can't the low kicks, everything like that.
No, ain't going to work against
doesn't
Joe.
Doesn't work.
This style of match is where it really cements the monster that Samoa Joe is. Like, against these guys, where this is not AJ Styles, it's not Christopher Daniels. You can afford to have Samoa Joe make some of these guys look like punks. And when you put him in that kind of realm, he just comes out like a world beater. And it's like, this is how this guy got over so well. Because wasn't his first match against Dutt, I believe I mentioned that on Unbreakable.
I think it was Slammiversary, yeah.
Yeah, so... that alone is I want to go back and see that match now just to see that the chemistry that they have, because I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the fuck out of it. We get some fantastic car crash X Division wrestling. 8 dudes subbing in and out to do the best to pop the crowd. Who can just get a better fucking reaction? You might call it lack of storytelling, but it's fun to me. It all culminates in a triple suicide dive, Saban, Aries, and Dutt. Back in the ring, Aries would pin Strong, and Daniels would roll him up and grab the tights, following a distraction by Joe, and it's a double elimination.
This might be bad wrestling to some people, car crash, spot monkey shit, but at the same time, this is what really caught my eye to TNA when I was younger.
100%.
Is that you watch cruiserweight matches that were going on in WWE, like Tajiri and Rey Mysterio, Matt Hardy, Nunzio, Funaki, Spike Dudley.
Yeah,
you're like,
this is not cruiserweight wrestling.
This isn't even the same Rey Mysterio.
No,
this is not fun.
They would even get Ultimo Dragon and Juventud and Psychosis after a while, and they're not the same either.
No.
The WWE.
Yeah. Like, it lost a lot of the fun that cruiserweight matches would have. And then when you see it, these X Division matches where it's just balls to the wall, fast, fury, like, good fucking God, you can't keep up.
They want it to be like video games.
And that is what makes it stand out. It makes it stand out so much compared to other, like, lightweights and stuff like that. So,
100%. I agree with you. The X Division is what originally brought me to TNA. That and the ECW guys that I wanted to see. You know, when I found out New Jack was in TNA through LimeWire, it's like, I need to find every New Jack match. Turns out there's not very many, and they aren't very good. But like,
even Shark Boy.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, finding these other Sandman's in TNA, Raven's in TNA, Sabu's in TNA, and then Jeff Hardy really drove me to TNA as well, just knowing, like, hey, Jeff's over there, because I remember downloading the Jeff debut against AJ Styles from Final Resolution, or was it Impact?
It was the 2004 anniversary show.
Oh, okay. So I remember downloading that match and watching it over and over again. And then because of that, seeing AJ Styles being like, hey, this guy's really fucking good too, you know? And then you get really into it.
Yeah.
And you realize that Jeff Hardy is just what got me in there, but AJ Styles and those cats are what kept me there.
Jeff Hardy was the gateway drug.
You would all. This match is just full of great work. Bentley, though, he would get showed up by a BME, by Daniels, after doing his elbow drop. But, you know, Bentley would end up cutting off Daniels, climbs onto his shoulder. Joe slaps the taste out of his mouth and it transfers him from Daniels' shoulders to a muscle buster and then into a Takina clutch for an elimination. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Fantastic. I never thought that you would see a transition into a muscle buster that way, but he pulled it off.
Torted him.
Yeah. You can see at one point in time, too, it was like his weight shifted and he almost prematurely went down with him. But he would you know, he'd work it back up and he would drop him down. Saban, this leaves him alone. It's just him on Daniels and Joe. He would springboard dropkick Joe, go for a cradle shock, but Daniels would cut him off. Joe would then save Daniels from a cradle shock of his own, put him up for the muscle buster, but Bentley would hook his leg. This is all Bentley done throughout the match. Giving Saban a chance to escape. Daniels then hit a Angel's Wings and pick up the victory, and it would cause more dissension between Joe and Daniels because Daniels stole his pin, even though he was laying on the ground.
Yeah, and they argue in the ring. They pretend to be on good terms, but Joe begins the ambush on Daniels, and I remember this vividly. I remember this from all the impacts.
Yeah.
This is infamous for me. This. He fucking destroyed Christopher Daniels. He destroys him here. He hits unprotected chair shots.
Yeah.
There's a girl screaming in the crowd.
She was really loud, too.
He sets Daniels up on a chair next to the guardrail. He face washes him. He brings him back in the ring. He muscle busters him, and there's blood all over Joe. He brings chairs in again. He tosses security around. He muscle busters Daniels on the chair.
Yeah.
And then AJ Styles shows up. He's kind of like
disappointing dad.
Yeah, he's just kind of like eyeing him up, just kind of like scared to go check up on Daniels because obviously he's gonna suffer the same fate as Christopher Daniels.
Yeah, it's a really good segment. That was a way to write a guy off. I don't know how long Daniels is getting written off here, but it's a great way to write a guy off here, just getting beat the shit. You know, it's Samoa Joe throughout this whole match was a monster, and to have it come around full circle at the end of the match, and he just kills him. Beautiful. The imagery of the blood, too, just because Daniel's bled really well.
And all the blood on Joe.
Yeah, he's even rubbing it on his face after a while. Yes. Blood on his towel, that's the best use of his towel. You know what I mean? He got this towel, he might as well wipe the blood off of your body into the towel. Make you look like a goddamn killer. This would bring us backstage with Douglas. He's talking with Jarrett and AMW. Jarrett says nothing of note, just a reason to be on screen. AMW cuts a promo how Team 3D are new to the company and they don't really know how things work. They would end it, you would think, by James Storm saying, sorry about your damn luck. But Jarrett just needs to have the last word. And I can't even remember what he said. That's how unimportant it was.
He's got a conspiracy, right?
Something about
there's
that,
there's a conspiracy,
yeah.
And Shane Douglas is like, you've been shouting to the high heavens, Jeff, that there's a conspiracy, that they're trying to rob you of your title. And Shane's just like, narc central over here. He's just like fucking brown-nosing with Jeff Jarrett. He's fucking brown-nosing and schmoozing up to the ECW guys.
Yeah.
Shane's a piece of shit.
He's a conniving double-crosser in this show. He's with everybody. Except for, like, there was one person he was just giving snide comments to. Who was that? Monty Brown.
Yeah, he was joking around with Monty.
Yeah, how, like, Christian might leapfrog you stupid guy. But, this would cut to Daniels getting loaded into the ambulance. And we would get a hype video that would play for Abyss and Sabu. Great image of Sabu with the barbed wire wrapped around his arm, showing him, like, the madman he is. And for a second in that video, I was like, are they playing Thorn in Your Eye? It was like I thought that the chugging guitar riff was very, but as soon as the action would pick up in the video, they would go somewhere else. And the song was like, oh, okay, no, never mind. I was like, because Spike would play the Hardy Boys theme on commercials all the time, Spike TV.
Yeah, they would.
So it was. I was like, is it one of these instances where it's just a show song is in the free domain? But I don't know how that ever worked. You'd think that because Jim Johnson wrote that song, didn't he? The Hardy Boys?
Yeah, highly doubt it.
Maybe not, hey?
Highly doubt it. I'm sure it's just public domain stuff.
Maybe. I mean, that's how they got the Bray Wyatt theme.
Yeah.
Right? So this would then bring us towards a hardcore match. But before we get into that hardcore match, let's just take a deep... It's a very short art of commentary, but sometimes commentary just makes you want to hang, shake, and bash your head. Sometimes you just laugh. By God, this is the first TNA art of commentary.
He's not going to let up. He knows once he gets a hold of that fire. Look at those vicious right forearms, Mike.
Crossface shot. What do you mean, get out of the way?
No. What in the world?
He just snapped. What does he mean, get out of the way?
I don't know, man. But I'm getting out of the way.
And I didn't come here to see a grown man dressed up like a doctor pulling things out of another man's ass. Amen!
He jumped! Handshake, hand extended to Conan. What are you going to do, K-Dog?
Conan's got it mini, called it fair.
They touch knuckles!
Bobby did it!
They touch knuckles. They touch knuckles. Oh, god damn. God damn.
They touch Knuckles. Knuckles.
Oh, fuck. But yeah, no, I'm so glad to be back to the Art of Commentary. I miss the Art of Commentary all the time. But this brings us to the hardcore match of Biff taking on Sabu. And this is obviously a match where Sabu is going to try to use the barbed wire against Abyss, and that's the story of this, is how can Sabu use the barbed wire? Answer is, he won't. Sabu fakes out Abyss, though, making him think that he has his arm wrapped in barbed wire, and this allows Sabu to get an early advantage, throwing a chair at the skull, followed by a triple jump springboard plancha to the outside. And at some point in time, you'll see like some scratches on Sabu's nose, and then you'll have Abyss come in, and they'll just start working it. Just like, hey, I see you got a cut on your nose. I'm going to stick punching you in the nose.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And he would just end up being all bloody after, and it worked out great. I don't know. Sabu is such a mystifying figure where I don't know if he is pissed off during the match or if it's an act as a character, but everything just seems to have pissed him off here. You know what I mean? He's swearing all the time. He looks like he's upset at something.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that. It's a character.
He's just a grumpy fart.
I think that he's just like a very miserable person.
Yeah, he's probably going through meth or crack meth withdrawals, or.
And I'm sure, with TNA, you know, like, oh, you got a botched table, something's not where it should be, there's a cameraman in the way, like the petty things that we've come to learn that piss wrestlers off, like Shawn Michaels. That, yeah, this would just piss him off. He's just mad. He's just fucking grumpy.
Yeah. And honestly, you take one look at Sabu, and it's like, yeah, no, that guy's a grumpy fucking dude. That guy's definitely a grumpy fucking dude. But grumpy fucking dude or not, piece of shit or not, because I feel like I've got to preface every time I give Sabu a compliment, I've got to preface that, yes, he's a royal piece of shit. It's a garbage human being. But it's another night where Sabu wouldn't really fuck anything up a whole lot. You know what I mean? We're not at that era of TNA yet where Sabu just screws up everything he does.
Oh, you're saying that he's worked with Abyss for the third month straight and he hasn't fucked anything up. I don't know if that says something about Sabu or if it says something about Abyss.
You're right. But I will say this. When he would go to the WWE, I don't recall him fucking up too much there either.
Well, how much did they let him do?
I mean, they gave him a program with John Cena.
Yeah, he had one match with John Cena.
That's more than what most of them got.
Yeah.
Well, like, that's crazy, though, how out of all the guys you get from ECW... Vince McMahon obviously has a shine for Sabu. Wanted him back in 96. Tried to get him after he jumped off the Raw sign. Always had an affinity for him. And now, it's like, okay, we got Sabu. Let's put him against John Cena. I've always wanted to see that guy face John Cena. Right? It's such a perplexing time.
Yeah, and you'd get that weird Rey Mysterio match.
Yeah.
That would end in a non-finish because they want Ray to drop the title to Sabu.
Yeah.
They didn't want to make either of them look bad. So let's just...
That match was bad. But yeah, no, this match here, it's, you know, Sabu, he would get hit in the head with I believe, a chair. And he would just fall down to the ground and he would just start vibrating, just like he'd put his hands next to his head and be like, ah. And all I could picture was just like, clocks keep going at the speed of sound, just Coldplay just playing in his head, just because he's just moving at the speed of sound here right now. It just looks like the crack mixed with the concussion has just sent him to another level. Abyss would get the tax. Once again, Sabu gets thrown on the tacks and littered with them. There would be so many tacks on his back.
And there would be a lot of dives into the tacks.
Yes.
And then Abyss would get palm tacks.
Yes, Sabu would as well. And Sabu would pick his out where Abyss would leave his
Sabu own. Would camel clutch Abyss in the tacks.
Yeah, that's got to be fucking comfortable, hey? Tacks just going into your dick. Gotta love it.
Well,
got to love it.
I mean, if you want to talk about uncomfortable, how about we talk about that barbed wire chair and what happens to it?
Oh, choke slammed. No, that was the tax.
He was going to powerbomb him?
Yes.
Didn't work out. So he fucking black hole slammed him into a chair wrapped in barbed wire, and it was thickly wrapped.
Before the move started and they introduced the chair, I was like, that's for sure got to be fake barbed wire, right? Has to be. Then they drop him on it. I was like, oh, good thing that's fake barbed wire. And then the show was back. It was like, oh, that's not fake barbed wire.
Was it fake barbed wire and those marks were just tacks? All the amount of tacks that he landed in.
There was a lot of blood for tacks, though.
Because the chair did not... there was no resistance on him leaving that chair.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it was a struggle for him to take his back off of the barbed wire chair.
Maybe. But it was painful. Yeah, like, and if that was fake barbed wire, they got really lucky with the amount of blood that came from those tacks. You know what I mean? Because like it was his back was bloody. It was fucking mangled. But hey, that's that match. Abyss gets the win. And you see Abyss. And the other thing that would make me think that it's real barbed wire is how gingerly Abyss pins him. He's like, lays an arm on his neck. He's like, don't want to put any weight on your back because I know this hurts you. Right?
Yeah.
It's either that or he's playing the gimmick of Abyss being afraid of barbed wire really well and he won't even pin him properly because of the barbed wire. Either way, works for me. This will bring us to a hype video. And then Styles will be backstage with Douglas. Who has a he has a shit-eating grin on his face while he's asking AJ about his hurt friend, Christopher Daniels. He says the Samoa violated the X Division code and that Canadian Destroyer is one of the coolest moves in the last 10 years. He doesn't know how to end a promo, so he just looks at the camera, slaps his chest, and does his pose. And that.
No, it's for a promo guy yet.
No, not yet. It would take a long time. Like, he would have to leave TNA, go to New Japan before he can... He would go to WWE before he would cut a decent promo, in my opinion.
He cuts a couple good ones as a heel in TNA and when he does the Drifter gimmick.
Admittedly, haven't watched much of that.
So. Yeah, it's okay.
It was the Ace and Ace, right, where they were trying to recruit him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this would be the second match that PD and AJ have had?
Yes. Actually, that Iron Man match.
Okay, third.
Oh.
Victory Road 2004, their first pay-per-view. I believe Petey Williams defeated AJ on that show for the X Division title, doing the top the Panama Sunrise.
Wow.
Not the Canadian Destroyer, nope. But the Panama Sunrise.
Yeah. Which is Canadian Destroyer where he jumps down.
He jumps down, yeah.
I forgot to mention this one in like the really good matches when I mentioned the hardcore match and the Elimination X, because this match, no flaws on this match either. You know, like it's great. PD Williams obviously gets the chance because of the X Division match, the rematch. I mean, he would win both of them, so I guess double whammy, right? AJ starts off this match running like the fucking wind with PD standing outside, and he hits a senton onto the floor with his ass bouncing off the guardrail.
This
is the most foreshadowing I've ever seen, because they hint at you that, hey, this guardrail's here. Jeff Hardy's tripped up in it. AJ Styles gets bounced into the fucking crowd because of his ample buttocks. And then all of a sudden, you get later on in the match, and it's like, I was like, fuck, man, good thing he never hurt himself. And then they would do, and I'll just cut to it. They're on the apron, and Petey has him, and he's going to fucking German him onto the fucking floor.
The spot that never happens. They tease the German off the apron. It never happens.
Never.
Never happens. And it looks like they're sodomizing their opponent.
Look like two flies fucking in the wind.
So this goes on and it goes on and it goes on. And eventually AJ just lets go.
Yeah.
And I fucking cringe.
I did too.
AJ cringes.
Oh, dude, the look on his face when they cut to him is like, that's real pain. That's real. That's a guy that can't breathe right now because he's got the wind knocked out of him. Right? He was in so much pain. When you think about that move, and to preface too, A1 slides the guardrail closer. Obviously, this was planned. I don't know why you would even think of doing this. It just doesn't seem like a smart move at all. But hey, AJ's young at this point in time, probably more willing to do stupid shit.
Could be an FU to WWE like they like to do, where it's like, oh yeah, Kurt Angle does this all the time. Well, we'll show you where what actually happens.
This is how you actually do it. This is how you break a rib, guys.
Yeah. Puncture a lung.
Yeah, like there were so many places that could have went wrong and could have really halted this match, could have halted somebody's career, really. But yeah, no. They would send A1 to the back after this, and I was shocked to see AJ fairly get over this whole thing and come back and have a decent match with PG Williams. fuck. But no, he gets over the bump and they do some good work. You get obviously PD's infamous moves, the O Canada spot where he, you know, stands on your nuts and sings O Canada, the diving Hurricane Rana outside where he damn near breaks his neck every time he does it. It's like his neck is so close to the floor when he's doing his twist. God damn. Beautiful. It's one of my favorite Hurricane Ranas, I think. Just his motion for it.
Yeah.
Looks great.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Both competitors, they try to hit their finishers. No one can pull the trigger. Petey then applies the Canadian Faithful, the sharpshooter.
Bending around to grab AJ's arm.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Beautiful. And you see a lot of guys do sharpshooters, and I mean, like, it's an easy move to pick at, but Petey does a good fucking sharpshooter.
Petey does it well, and he lives up to the long line of good sharpshooters.
100%.
He is not a Rock or a Sting.
Nope. Nope. He's much better than either one of those. And we would also get a superb phenomenal forearm by AJ. At this point in time, not really called that yet, but hey. It is what it is. But Styles would have PD up for a superplex. PD counters it and attempts a super Canadian destroyer, but AJ hangs on. He would tease a spiral tap, but is distracted by Joe and his bloody towel, who has just come out on the ramp to stare daggers in AJ Styles. Petey then attempts a superplex of his own, but is reversed into a Styles clash from the second rope for the win.
Awesome.
It was fucking phenomenal, man. It was great. Joe and Styles then stare at each other for a long time, and then we get this weird, I don't know if maybe it was like my feed screwing up. There was like this hard cut from Joe and AJ to Petey getting out of the ring and nobody else is around. But it just was a very abrupt cut.
I wouldn't even worry about that, Tyler, when we have commercial breaks on every single pay-per-view.
These are obviously the rips for Fight TV. Not like Fight TV, the website, but Fight Network in Canada, where they would play these there.
You think so?
I think so. I really think so. Why else would they have commercial breaks? As a pay-per-view, there wasn't any commercials.
I don't know. Yeah. Unless it...
And when they come back from the break, it's the exact same spot where we left off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to me, it's cut for TV, because I do know Fight Network do play Impact pay-per-views. So...
It's perplexing. It's very perplexing.
I also don't like the TNA bars on the side.
I would rather just have black.
Yeah, nothing. I would too.
Just nothing.
I would too. It looks a little gaudy to me. But this would bring us to Team 3D and Rhino. They reunite with the franchise. They make extreme puns. Bubba, so many extreme
puns.
He's
with his bud now.
Yeah. Yeah. Bubba says they respect A&W for doing something that no one has ever done, and that's lay them out and leave them for dead. And then they talk about, obviously, the funeral where he pisses in their casket, drinks booze.
You drank booze?
You
pissed in our caskets?
Drank booze?
You drank booze?
That line is just fucking ridiculous.
For dead. You then took it to a funeral home, made fun of us, drank booze, pissed in our coffins. But you made a mistake.
Drank
not
booze.
A fatal mistake.
Rhino then tells Jarrett that he's going to gore him. Devon then goes and does the Oh My Brother testify. And then Bubba pulls the Jeff Jarrett and is like, I got one more thing to say. At least this time, something proper.
Vaya con Dios.
Yes. Where he pays tribute to Eddie Guerrero.
Only ever heard someone say that on King of the Hill.
Do you know what it means?
I don't know, but the priest with the gun, Monsignor Martinez, or whatever his name was, he always says before he kills someone, vaya con Dios.
God damn. That's a show where I always want to go back and rewatch it, and then I never ever do it because there's nowhere to watch. I got to download it or buy all the seasons.
Yeah, I I got them all on an external hard drive.
Well, it's like I got every episode of Malcolm in the Middle too, yeah. And it's like we're eating up 30 gigs on my 120 gig SSD, and I won't delete it because I don't want to delete it because it's like it's Malcolm in the Middle. Like whenever like power goes out, watch Malcolm in the Middle. You know what I mean? I got nothing else to watch. Malcolm in the Middle. Right? It's just always it's a go to. So. There you go. I knew there was a hair in my mouth, and now it's gone. This brings us to a six-man tag team match between Rhino and Team 3D taking on America's Most Wanted and Jeff Jarrett. Planet Jarrett, if you will. And this is a New Jack match in ECW, just without New Jack and the crazy stuff that New Jack brings.
Usually I agree with Uncle Dave a lot.
This is not a four-star match.
This is not a four-star match.
No.
Wow. I was so bored.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fine, but we saw 100%. This style of match, Raven versus PJ. We saw this style of match, Jeff versus Monty. How many times do we have to see to the crowd brawls?
I hate it.
Like, this is ECW, where it's like, drink every time they go to the crowd. You're going to be drunk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you got to continue drinking the whole time they're in the crowd, you will be fucking shittered.
Yeah, like, it doesn't stop, and... This is the worst case. This is fucking the worst of it too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's Spanish announce table fodder up top where, I mean, I didn't know that the Spanish announce table was in the nosebleeds.
I didn't either. That was, I will say that's probably the best spot of the show or of the match where Rhino gets hit in the dick and he rolls off the Spanish announce table and down the bleachers.
Yeah.
There's also a good spot where I believe it's Harris gets fucking just thrown over the announce table and just hits the wall like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
There's a couple good spots. James Storm throwing a beer bottle at Bubba and missing him and making that loud echo of it breaking on the wall was just, it was great.
Great. Wall of that thing.
He did. Thank God it didn't hit
Bubba.
If Bubba
got hit by that.
Stitches everywhere. You know, there are some good moments, but that's about it.
We get a cheese grater.
Yep. Yep. No pizza cutter this time, though.
No, there's a brawl on the stage between Rhino and Jarrett.
They would set up the table in the entranceway, and I really liked the camera angle from inside the tunnel.
Yeah.
Looking at the table. It would have been much better, if you ask me, if Rhino would have been able to gore Jarrett through that table. But
if the gore actually hit, it would have been cool. But I liked also the super kick out of nowhere midway through.
A good, well-timed super kick is always good, if you ask me.
This match did more favors, I think, for America's Most Wanted than anyone in this match.
Yeah.
This match made America's Most Wanted look like players.
It did. It really did. And they're actually, I don't know if they, I'm sure they were a heel at some point in time. But at this point in time, it's been a long time since they've been a heel. And they're much better as a heel than a babyface team.
AMW?
In my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a shame now that obviously this is their last run with the title. So you're not going to see much more of them as a team. But
yeah, they got a few months left, but still it's. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, because they would break them up before Harris left, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The crowd starts chanting for tables. Team 3 get Wood out as soon as they start chanting for tables. But every time they would try to put somebody through a table would get moved. And this would just kill the fans every time. The fans would just go quiet for like 2 minutes after that would happen and just deflate them completely. Because all they want is to see tables. They're not here to see a good match. They're here to see this shit.
And this is a crowd that's already seen everything you could see besides for fire.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you're not going to allow them to see the table spot? Come on, guys. I understand building towards the table spot because, I mean, it's wrestling, you should. But when this match and this show in general has seen so much, there's certain things you got to just have a prerequisite, in my opinion, in a hardcore match. It's like, yeah, he's going to go through tables.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not save the table spot because we've seen Sabu put Abyss through a table.
And there's more to the final angle of the show than a table spot. They could have already done a table spot in the match.
Yeah. Didn't matter.
It wouldn't have hurt.
No.
The way that the crowd left that show at all.
No. No. Definitely not. Rhino, you know, he would end up hitting a Gore in the ring. A&W would then hit the death sentence, but only get a two. Team 3D would hit the, a 3D of their own and pick up the victory for their team. And that's the match. But once the match is over, obviously, Jarrett's got to get his heat back.
Yeah.
Always. Always. He hits Rhino with a guitar. This is where Team 3D set up the table. Gail Kim tries a low blow, Brother Ray, leading to an attempted power bomb on Kim through the table through Jarrett. This would not happen, obviously. Team Canada would make the save, and then this is where Christian would come down in his jacket again, hiding the Team Canada shirt, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, he doesn't join Team Canada, but they hint at it where he takes off his shirt and he's wearing takes off his jacket and he's wearing a shirt, and it would all be a ruse because he's wearing a black TNA shirt under it. So, yeah.
It was a ruse on top of a ruse.
Yes. Yes. Swerve, bro. You would hit a Prettier on Damore, and they would clean house. So, yeah, that's the show.
Yeah.
That's the
and,
show.
Well, a three-way 3D would end the show.
Yes, yes.
A three-dimensional 3D.
It's like three-dimensional Doritos, but it's a wrestling
they're
movie.
Back.
They're back, yeah. Goddamn right, they're back. I don't know if I've ever had it. I think I might have, like, had one or two pieces. I've never had a bag of them. But yeah, that's TNA Genesis 2005. Wasn't originally going to be on the list, but it is, and I'm glad we did it. Very good show. Up next is going to be, is it Turning Point 2005? We're not going to run down that card right now because that is not this week. Next week's episode. Next week's episode will be a double feature. It's going to be the Hayabusa double feature show. If you're on Patreon, it'll be the triple feature. But yeah, we'll be back to talk about that next week. So tune in for more if you are a Hayabusa FMW fan. But Travis, you have anything else to say before we leave these fine folks?
No.
Nothing. No. Nothing. You can follow us on Twitter at Futteration. You can follow Travis on Twitter
at Fudging Up.
You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at the Futteration Podcast. T-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. And become a member of the Fudge family. Watch these live feeds on Patreon every Thursday. Get episodes 2 days early. And in shows like the double feature, you'll get an extra match on the triple feature. So we'll be doing that next week. $5 to get you that match. And then $10 to get you some merch. $15 to get you to pick what show we do. And hell, if you wanted to, you can join in for a bit on that show as well. But with that being said, Travis, keep on rocking in the free world and
doot doot loot doot
doot doot.